You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in, everyone, to a special trade deadline episode of Locked On Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose. As many of you have probably already heard, the first domino of the trade season has officially fallen, and it's certainly not an ideal one for the Houston Rockets. The Orlando Magic have traded big man Serge Ibaka to the Toronto Raptors for Terrence Ross and a future first-round pick. Now, we've reported extensively on this show about the potential fit of Ibaka in Houston. Last week, we had Calvin Watkins, Rockets beat writer for ESPN.com, confirming his report that the Rockets did have interest in Ibaka. However, despite that potential match, of course, Ibaka is not going to become a Houston Rocket. So with that in mind, I wanted to use the show to break down what this news tells us about the Rockets, both from the standpoint of what they might have been willing or not willing to give for Ibaka, as well as what it tells us about their approach to the deadline over the next week. So first things first, Serge Ibaka, let's get it out of the way. Yes, he would have been a fit. The two needs for the Rockets that we all know, they could use a little more rim protection inside, and they could also use a little bit more shooting and defense on the perimeter. And Ibaka, he serves a lot of needs. He's not the shot blocker he once was, but he can still be a presence inside. He can boost you defensively, whereas Clint Capella, Nene, Montrezl Harrell, all offense first players, Ibaka does give you a little bit different dimension. And then in terms of his perimeter game, this is a guy who shoots almost 39% from three. So you have an interior shot blocker on defense who can step out to the perimeter and shoot close to 40% from behind the arc. Yes, there's absolutely many ways that the Rockets could have used him with James Harden and in Mike D'Antoni's scheme. So it would have been nice to get him. Unfortunately, he's gone to Toronto. And while there's a few things we can kind of take out of this, but I don't think it's an indictment on Ibaka or his fit, because certainly he would have been a fit, and I do believe the reports that the Rockets were interested. It's just other reasons, primarily long-term cap ramifications, why the Rockets did not bid more heavily. And of course, that tells us a little bit more about what their likely goals are as we get closer to the deadline, which is next Thursday. First and foremost, one thing that really stands out to me about this trade, I think there are a lot of people in the NBA Twitterverse that are overvaluing Terrence Ross. This is a guy in his fifth year who has never averaged more than 10 points per game. He's not particularly good at defense. He's not a great assist or rebound man. I know a lot of folks like him because he's young, athletic. We all remember when he won the dunk contest a few years back, and he shoots in the upper 30s% from three. So he has potential to be a decent 3-and-D option, and, well, you can never have too many of those in the NBA. But at this point, year five, you can't just say he has this unlimited potential. When you get to the stage that he's at, year five, 26 years old, generally players are what they are. And for Terrence Ross, he's a capable role player, and that's a decent return for Orlando, but I don't think it's anything that moves the needle for them long term. And for that matter, neither is the draft pick. The draft pick that Toronto is giving up is the lower of the first-round picks they own this year, which is their own, as well as one from the Los Angeles Clippers. So it's likely going to be in the bottom five of the entire first round. Could be very close to the first-round pick that Houston has right now, its own pick. So the draft picks, Toronto and a probable Houston offer, those are essentially a wash. And then you look at Terrence Ross. I would say Sam Decker or Clint Capella easily best Terrence Ross in terms of long-term value. And Montrezl Harrell might actually come close, especially when Harrell has a couple of years of extremely cheap labor. And I would argue that Harrell's upside is a little bit higher than Terrence Ross at this point, because we know what Terrence Ross is. Now, I'm not going to sit here and say 100% that I know they value Terrence Ross ahead of Montrezl Harrell. I'm just saying certainly it's close enough where the Rockets could have been competitive with the offer of Montrezl Harrell in a first, and if they had offered, say, Sam Decker in a first, I think absolutely that would have been a better deal for Toronto, for Orlando, even if they would have had to have swallowed Corey Brewer's contract. I saw a couple of folks on Twitter saying, well, maybe the Rockets didn't get in the game because Orlando wouldn't take Corey Brewer's contract. I don't really buy that angle. The thing with Corey's contract, 1 year after this year, $7.5 million, it's really not that extreme in the current cap environment. And for a team like Orlando, Orlando's looking at a multi-year rebuild anyway. I don't think Orlando's going to make a major splash in July 2017 free agency, because to get a guy to Orlando this summer, you're probably going to have to overpay. Realistically, I think Orlando's probably looking ahead towards 2018, 2019 to be more aggressive. And by that point, Corey Brewer's salary is off the books anyway. So I really don't think Corey's 1 year at $7.5 million, which the Rockets, of course, would have had to include for salary matching purposes to get Ibaka or any other player of a substantive salary, I don't think that derailed it, especially for a lower-tier team like Orlando. I doubt they'd be in a position to really grab someone of significance in the marquee round of free agency this summer. Anyway, I think if they were to make that kind of play this summer, they would be overpaying. So I think you're looking at probably a little bit of a delayed gratification already from Orlando in a cap perspective. So no, I don't think Corey would have derailed it. I'm not saying Corey Brewer is an asset, but I also don't think he's this albatross that killed a deal. I think Orlando, if the pieces were right, absolutely would have accepted him. However, the Rockets were not willing to offer the pieces. I think if they had been willing to offer Sam Decker or Clint Capella, absolutely a deal would have gotten done, and maybe even Montrezl Harrell. But I think that the Rockets weren't willing to do that, and that's the biggest factor why the Rockets were not heavily involved in these negotiations. Now, why was Toronto willing to give a little bit more? Because I did mention that I think Terrence Ross is overvalued a bit, but he's still a positive asset. At $10 million a year locked in for the next 3 years, that's a pretty good contract in the current cap environment, and so that's a little bit more than the Rockets were willing to pay, even considering that I think Ross might be a tad bit overvalued. So why weren't the Rockets more involved in this? The tweet from Adrian Wojnarowski, the god of sports journalism, of course you know him as Woj Vertical NBA, sources, Toronto is trading for Ibaka with the intention of trying to re-sign him in free agency this summer. The GM has long coveted him. That right there is the difference. I've brought it up before, but for the Rockets, everything they do is built around still having the option in July 2017 and maybe even July 2018 of potentially adding a second all-star caliber player to pair with James Harden. So for the Rockets, there's no way you could add Serge Ibaka, keep him long-term. I saw a lot of people when these rumors starting saying, well, maybe Ibaka would resign with the Rockets given his relationship with Harden. Yeah, I think he absolutely would have been willing to. Houston's a destination franchise. People want to go there. But for the Rockets to re-sign him, even to keep the option open, his cap hold this summer would have been about $18 million, which absolutely would preclude the Rockets from having any sort of significant flexibility to go after the likes of Blake Griffin, Chris Paul, Gordon Hayward. I'm just throwing names out there of guys that could be on the market this summer and are definitely players a tier ahead of Serge Ibaka. So for the Rockets, any aspect of keeping Ibaka beyond this year would have essentially been locking into a core of the current team plus Ibaka. And is that a really good team? Sure. But in this landscape where you have the Golden State Warriors, the Cleveland Cavaliers, just absolutely loaded teams, I don't think the Rockets wanted to say, this is my team, ride or die. Serge Ibaka is a nice player. He is not at that level. So for the Rockets, it was not worth it to invest in Serge Ibaka long-term and say, we want this guy to be a part of the core. Because in a normal NBA, that might be enough. Ibaka as your second-best player after James Harden, or maybe one of several potential second-best players. You have to throw Eric Gordon and Trevor Ariza in there as well, given the value of their contributions, and maybe even Clint Capella. So yeah, you'd have a very deep team. They wouldn't have any weaknesses. But with the likes of the Warriors, you have to think not just a really good team, you have to think an elite team. And big picture, that probably means needing to acquire another all-star level player next to James Harden. And it was not worth diminishing the flexibility by committing to Serge Ibaka long-term. Toronto, it's different. Toronto, there's a well-established pattern of free agents not really wanting to go there. So I think they were much more willing to essentially gamble on the trade market, hopefully get a guy into their culture. And of course, you pair him with Kyle Lowry. That's very much a win now situation in Toronto. And as Woj said, they are willing to commit to him long term. Now, they can't officially re-sign him now, but they're willing to commit to the idea that, hey, our current core plus Serge Ibaka, that's what we want to do. We're going to go to war with those guys. And I think Toronto's in a little bit of a different situation. As I said, some of their free agency limitations, given that they're in Canada, I think they're more willing to do that. Whereas the Rockets, they don't want to make that their ride or die team. I think having Serge Ibaka would have been nice, but because they're not willing to commit to the idea of him long term, they're not going to be as willing to part with a significant asset as Toronto would. So that's the difference.
You're listening to Love Advice with Leanne. Caller, you're on the air.
Hi, Leanne. Longtime listener, first-time caller. Why, in your professional opinion, do you never take my calls off the air?
Is this Carl?
Yep, it's Carl. I mean, we had a few dates. Everything was great, I thought.
Well, you know, when you switch to GEICO, you could save a lot of money on car insurance.
Okay, awesome.
You should call them.
I will.
GEICO, because saving 15% or more on car insurance is always a great answer.
What does it mean for the Rockets going forward as far as the rest of the deadline? Well, I do think it shows that the Rockets are serious about not breaking up the core of the team. Now, I didn't expect them to begin with. I don't think Daryl Morey's lying when he said that he thinks the most likely deal is going to be one for depth, but this really reiterates how tough it's going to be for the Rockets to strike a bigger deal, because Ibaka might be the cream of the crop. He checked multiple boxes for what the Rockets need, and he's as good as it's available at the deadline, at least that we've heard, and the Rockets still did not finalize this deal. And the most likely reason for that, in my opinion, is that because of the long-term financial figures, they would have had to have valued Ibaka as a rental, not a long-term fixture. And when you're looking at someone purely as a rental, we'd love to have him for this year, but you can't keep him long-term, at least not with your valuation of the team at the moment. That means clearly not giving up Sam Decker or Clint Capella, and maybe not even Montrezl Harrell as well. So what does that mean for the rest of the deadline? Well, to me, what it says is, rental or not, the Rockets are not going to go all in at this deadline unless it's for a legit all-star level player. And as I see it, I don't know that that type of player is on the market right now. If Serge Ibaka wasn't enough, given that he can shoot threes, protect the rim, get a few shot blocks, still athletic, has a relationship with Harden, if that wasn't enough to get the Rockets to trade one of their young pieces, I don't know what is, because I don't think they're going to want to trade for a guy with a significant contract beyond this season for the same reason they weren't really open to the idea of keeping Ibaka long-term. And for a rental, if they weren't willing to give that for Serge Ibaka, I don't know who they would, because Ibaka, as I said, is probably the cream of the crop when you look at the availability at this deadline. So to me, what that says is that the Rockets are unlikely to make any sort of long-term commitment. I do think they're going to be in the market for rentals or guys on smaller contracts. One of the rumors I've seen that I would keep an eye on is the Phoenix situation. They're obviously in a sell-off given that they're a rebuilding year and you have guys like PJ Tucker and Leandro Barbosa. Those are veterans that don't really fit. Tucker is, he's expiring and he also gives you some defense. He would be an upgrade on Corey Brewer's place in the rotation. Leandro Barbosa, there's the history with Mike D'Antoni. Barbosa does have one more year left on his contract, but it's a very small contract at $4 million a year, so you could move it if you really needed that space. And who knows, he might retire. There's just a lot of options when you look at the Barbosa-Mike D'Antoni connection. So those two guys I would keep an eye on. But bigger than that, it's going to be tough because all it takes is one team. I think the Rockets were in the market for Ibaka, and they'll be in the market for a lot of guys, but I think it would be kind of lowball offers. And that's something we saw from Zach Lowe, which was that outside of the Toronto deal, it was shocking how low the offers were for Ibaka, and that's because I think a lot of teams are looking at it the same way. Because everyone wants flexibility going into a massive summer of free agency, no one's willing to trade for Ibaka under the expectation that he's anything more than a rental. And so when you're looking at that, you're going to get some lowball bids. Toronto was the perfect storm for Orlando, and they struck a deal. And so that's why the Rockets weren't able to do that. I could see the Rockets lowballing a few other teams with comparable bigs or 3-and-D guys in similar spots, and maybe one of those takes, because there's not a Toronto that's willing to invest in that player long term. But it's probably going to take until closer to the deadline, because you have to get those teams to come down off their asking prices. The good thing for Orlando and Toronto, the deal got done now over a week before the deadline, because, it was good enough for Orlando to say, I'm going to pull the trigger now. And the deal was much better, it sounds like, than anything else they had offered. For others, I would suspect it's going to take until next week to really gain traction for the Rockets, because they're probably not offering that much. Now, the good side, if you want a silver lining to all of this, Toronto is one of the only teams, in my opinion, besides the Rockets, that could actually be conceived as a buyer at this deadline. Because as I've said before, with the bar so high, the Warriors and Cavaliers so good, there are much fewer NBA teams that are close to that top tier than have been in past deadlines. Whereas in the past, you have maybe 6, 8, even 10 teams that feel like, they're a mid mid-size acquisition away from potentially having a chance to do some damage in the playoffs. Really, there are not many teams even close to that top tier right now, and Toronto's one of them. So now that you've scratched them off the list, even in both conferences, I don't know what you have. Boston, maybe, in the East. The West, obviously not the Warriors. I would be shocked if the Spurs did something of significance. The Clippers, perhaps, because there's a lot of desperation this year in Clipperland with multiple stars about to become free agents, but it seems like their attention is kind of fixated on Carmelo Anthony if they do something, and I've said before, I absolutely don't expect the Rockets to be in the ballgame for Carmelo. So when you look at the landscape, there are really not that many teams that you could say are close. And if your team is not close, if someone like Serge Ibaka, well, or now that he's gone, any other potential rental is not going to give you even a slight chance at competing for a ring, what are you willing to offer? So that's kind of the silver lining for the Rockets out of all of this, that one of the only teams that's kind of similar to them, Toronto, being in that tier right behind Golden State or Cleveland, they're now out. Toronto has given up their main assets. They've given up Terrence Ross. They've given up one of the first-round draft picks. So I won't say that makes the Raptors 100% done at the deadline, but it significantly weakens their hand. So right now, if you're the Rockets, you're competing maybe with Boston. I guess you could say Utah or the Clippers. As I said, really, I think the Clippers are focused primarily on Carmelo, and I don't know really what Utah's assets are at this point. So really, the Rockets are in a pretty good spot when you look around the NBA, because with the bar so high, I don't know what other teams would make sense for that kind of acquisition. The one constant with Ibaka has been Toronto, and lo and behold, that's what got a deal done. But now with Toronto off the market, maybe that puts the Rockets in a little bit better position. That's kind of my closing thoughts on this. And as I said, just to kind of sum up the point of this episode, which is that, well, the Rockets did not strike a deal for Serge Ibaka. What does it tell us? I think it says pretty clearly that the Rockets are valuing July 2017 and their potential flexibility very highly, because giving Orlando a package comparable to Terrence Ross and a first-round pick, could the Rockets have done it? Absolutely. If they wanted Ibaka, they absolutely could have gotten him, in my opinion. The Rockets could have trumped that offer, and Orlando probably would have preferred to have sent him to the Western Conference, all things being equal. But the Rockets chose not to go there because, well, valuing Ibaka enough to give up some of your young pieces like Montrezl Harrell or even Sam Decker or Clint Capela means seeing Serge Ibaka as a fit beyond this year. And for cap reasons, I don't think the Rockets view him as that, because while Serge Ibaka is a nice player, he's probably not someone you want to lock in as your number two for the foreseeable future, your ride or die for this team you want to compete with the Warriors. I think the Rockets would rather see what's behind mystery door number two, which is July 2017 free agency, and keep their options open. And so I think that's going to be the framework that guides them through the rest of the deadline. Do I expect them to be active? Yes, I do. There are needs the Rockets have: rim protector, 3-and-D, more shooting overall. I think they can get deals done because, as I said, I don't know that there are really that many buyers, especially for veterans, especially for rentals. So I do think the Rockets are going to be active. I do think the fact that they're playing so much better lately is going to make them even more likely to do a deal. But it's probably not going to be that top tier, and it's going to take until closer to the deadline, because I think what the Rockets are offering, some teams would call lowball. Now, I'm sure the Rockets wouldn't call it lowball. They'd call it just, you know, market efficiency, and that's the going rate, and that's the best those teams can expect. But from a practical standpoint, they're going to probably hold on a little closer to the deadline, and the pressure starts to kind of ratchet up on them, and then they might come back to the table and accept whatever it is that the Rockets are offering. Anyway, with that said, I'll wrap up this brief off-day episode of Locked On Rockets. Again, it's Tuesday afternoon. The Rockets did practice today. The good news is that Ryan Anderson and Eric Gordon both took part. Eric Gordon dealing with the sore back, and Ryan Anderson dealing with a cut finger in a bizarre trash accident, taking out the trash on Sunday night. Ryan Anderson's saying, I was never that worried about it. Worst case, he misses one game, and he's back after the deadline, because you have, after this Wednesday's game, you don't play again until next Thursday. So Ryan's situation, I don't worry about at all, and playing against the Miami team that's several games under 500, the Rockets should be a favorite. As long as James Harden plays, they should be a favorite in that game. Eric Gordon's a little more concerning because the back injury has lingered for a while. However, I do, the more I think about it, I like the idea of playing, because on one hand, yes, you could get him 2+ weeks off, buy him another week without playing at all, but rust is a factor too. I think these guys, there's something to the rhythm of playing on a regular basis. And so I don't think Eric Gordon wants to go 2 or 3 weeks without playing an NBA game. There's also something to be said for going out there and not being tentative. I think these guys gain a lot when you have someone coming off an injury, just going out there and feeling like themselves, like they can make that drive, absorb contact, and that back's not going to lock up. There's a mental hurdle. And so I think if you get Eric Gordon to play this game, it helps you from not keeping him or not letting him get too rusty. And I think it also helps him mentally because he will have absorbed that contact before you get back from the All-Star break. And starting next Thursday, for really the last 2 months of the season in the playoffs, you're not really going to have this extended stretch of rest. You're going to have to be in a regular routine. And so I think mentally, in terms of keeping him sharp, as well as getting over the injury, I think if he goes out, even if you limit him to, say, 15 to 20 minutes, I think just having 15 or 20 successful minutes, not getting hurt, that could do a lot for Eric. Now, he still hasn't been officially cleared, but he did practice today, and I think that's a good sign that the odds are with him being able to play on Wednesday night against the Miami Heat, unless there's some unknown setback in the next 24 hours. Maybe his back doesn't respond well to practice, but for all we know, so far, so good. And I would think that the odds with both practicing on Tuesday are pretty good for both Ryan Anderson and Eric Gordon to play tomorrow night at Toyota Center. And of course, if they do and the Rockets get the win, they would be 41-17 at the All-Star break, having won 6 of their last 7 games and 5 in a row. So yeah, if the Rockets can get this game tomorrow night, I think they're going to be feeling really good about themselves over the next 8 days. And of course, with the deadline looming next Thursday, there's a chance for the Rockets to get even more reinforcements and depth in the days ahead. It just, well, will not be Serge Ibaka. So that said, I'll wrap up. Again, I'm Ben DuBose, your host. You can follow me on Twitter at Ben DuBose. This is Locked on Rockets, your only daily podcast covering the Houston Rockets. You can follow us on Twitter at Locked on Rockets. You can also subscribe to us, rate us, find any of our archives, Google Play, Audio Boom, iTunes, Stitcher, wherever you subscribe and listen to your media, just search for Locked on Rockets and you should be able to find us. Well, I guess the good news is that tomorrow we'll be able to get back to basketball. These games have been so spread out lately that we haven't had too many game shows. Yesterday we did a special Valentine's Day special. By the way, happy Valentine's Day. But with Bree Hodenfield, Rockets superfan, OO Rocket Girl on Twitter, talking about her incredibly humorous and witty Rockets Valentine's cards. If you haven't seen those, please visit OO Rocket Girl on Twitter, and well, you will be laughing for quite a while. But tomorrow, we get back to basketball, and then after tomorrow's games, we'll start doing interviews with some of the major beat writers around the country, seeing just what it is the Rockets might do heading into next Thursday's trade deadline. For now, I'll sign off. Appreciate you guys, as always, for listening. I'm Ben. This is Locked on Rockets, and we'll be talking with you again tomorrow night from Toyota Center when the Rockets close out the first half, or, well, it's beyond the first half, but the pre-All-Star break portion of the schedule at home against the Miami Heat. Talk to you guys then.
Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM, Talkspace.com/boom, BOOM.